Hi, this is Ruth McCauley with news from the Decatur area for Thursday, November 5th. And we begin with articles out of the Decatur Herald and Review. Our first is written by Allison Petty, who's a staff writer for the Decatur Herald and Review. The headline reads, Park District Approves Tax Increase. The Decatur Park District Board of Commissioners approved a slight property tax increase next year to pay for capital expenses, notably improvements to roofs, pavements, and aging equipment. The board voted 3-1 to cap its tax rate at $1.15 per $100 of equalized assessed valuation, 3 cents higher than this year's tax rate. With an expected 1.4% increase in property values, the levy is expected to bring in $9.4 million. The owners of a $100,000 home would pay an additional $8.19 under the change, bringing the total Park District portion of their bill to $314.08. The Park District delayed major capital needs over the past 5 years as it dealt with declining property values, Chief Financial Officer Rodney Burr previously told the board. Now those costs have caught up with the district, which also faces uncertainty as state-level discussion of a minimum wage increase and property tax freeze remain unresolved. I'm against raising taxes, but my financial responsibility to the public is to make sure that we have a good park system for everybody, Commissioner Bob Brilley II said. If this don't work, we're going to have to make more cuts. That's just a fact. The district has already made a number of cuts in recent years, including disbanding the Decatur Park Singers, closing Big Creek Writing Center, and eliminating a number of staff positions. Commissioner Chris Riley said he wanted to see the extra money used particularly for roads and roofs, repairs that in some cases have already been put off for years. It's simple things we've been talking about, honestly, as a board for 6 to 8 years and haven't really taken a step to do it, Riley said. I think this is the opportunity we have to take now, to take that extra step. Commissioner Chris Harrison voted against the increase. While he said the expected rise in property values is a positive sign, he thought the district should not add taxes during a recovery period. I know other entities have said they're raising taxes, but I don't see that as a justification that we should. Incrementally, it doesn't sound like much, but the base that's there is already so much, he said. Commissioner Jack Kenney voted for the rate increase. Commissioner Stacy Young was absent. The district's capital plan for the coming year, which commissioners also reviewed at the meeting, mostly involves maintaining what the district already has, Burr said. A major expense is the $330,000 replacement of a roof for Fairview Park Pavilion 1, a large part of the estimated $580,000 in roof and pavement costs. Another $336,000 is budgeted for the replacement of equipment. Burr said the district maintains nearly $6 million of equipment overall, including a range of mowers, tractors, vans, pickup trucks, golf and utility carts, and dump trucks. Unfortunately, this is one of those items that gets pushed back from year to year, he said. The board is expected to vote on the capital plan at a future meeting. Our next article comes from Springfield and was written by Bureau Chief Kurt Erickson. Rauner warns against restoring child care cutbacks. Governor Bruce Rauner is putting on a full court press to try to stop Democrats from blocking his cuts to a child care assistance program. In a letter to lawmakers Wednesday, the governor's human services chief and his budget director said legislation that could come up for a vote in the Illinois House next week would add $220 million in costs for the remainder of the fiscal year and hamstring the administration when it comes to complying with federal rules. It increases the deficit, restricts an administration's ability to manage it to draw federal dollars and comply with changing federal rules, and locks in place the type of financial scheme that has caused Illinois to deficit spend for years, the letter notes. The bottom line, a vote for SB, Senate Bill 570, is a vote to increase the budget deficit and force a massive tax increase on the people of Illinois, the note said. The letter from Department of Human Services Director James Dimas and Budget Director Tim Newding is the latest salvo in an ongoing battle over the Republican governor's move to reduce eligibility for a program that helps low-income parents pay for child care. In July, Rauner imposed an emergency rule that resulted in an estimated 90% of families who previously qualified for help being cut out of the program. In August, Democrats on a special rulemaking committee failed to wrangle enough votes to stop the rule from going into effect. Child care advocates said Rauner has abused his executive powers to reduce the eligibility limits. They pulled the rug out from families overnight, said Ceci Nyman, vice president of Illinois Action for Children. In September, a legislative push to restore funding and bar Rauner from imposing eligibility limits on the program fell short in the House by 3 votes. It is not clear whether Democrats will call the measure for a second vote when the House reconvenes Tuesday for the first time in 3 weeks. The measure has already moved through the Senate. With Republicans in the House generally siding with Rauner, the measure will need all 71 Democrats in the chamber to vote yes. Steve Brown, spokesman for House Speaker Michael Madigan, a Democrat of Chicago, said the standoff is based on philosophical differences between the Republican governor and Democrat lawmakers. They want to deny child care services to a whole segment of the Illinois population for bottom line dollars and cents, without regard to how this throws families into chaos, Brown said. We think allowing single parents to continue to work is a better outcome. Rauner's spokeswoman Catherine Kelly said the legislation should not limit the governor's powers to manage state government. Unfortunately, rather than passing a budget, the majority wants to politicize this issue, but with a huge price tag for taxpayers and a number of unintended consequences outlined in the memo, the bill presents a real problem for centrist Democrats, especially those who portray themselves as fiscal conservatives, Kelly said. More than 50 Democrats in the House have signed on to the measure as co-sponsors, including State Representatives Sue Scherer of Decatur, Mike Smitty of Hillsdale, and John Bradley of Marion, and Pat Vershore of Milan. Our next article was written by Ryan Voiles, who's an H&R staff writer. Buffett Foundation donation to aid Sheriff's Office initiatives. The Macon County Sheriff's Office is set to undertake a multifaceted program to engage mental health issues, juvenile detention and monitoring issues, and illegal drug dependency counseling in the area. Sheriff's Lieutenant Jonathan Butts said the program will provide the needed alternative for incarcerated adult offenders in the Macon County Jail, with the hope it will reduce the overall costs to operate the county's facility and offer inpatient and outpatient counseling and approved treatment programs. The sheriff's office will oversee and administer multiple programs to provide necessary care and needed supervision, which would include immediate need for drug treatment, mental health treatment, and for juveniles who are in more intense supervision, monitoring, and accountability programs. The cost of the program, up to $2.5 million, will be covered by a donation from the Howard G. Buffett Foundation. A full-time deputy will be assigned as a contact person and monitor the program. The deputy's salary and benefits will be covered by the donation over a four-year period. The design and budget of these programs are being developed, Butt said. For juveniles, the sheriff's office will work closely with the Macon County Probation Department, which handles juvenile cases. While the current contact with Peoria County, which houses Macon County juveniles, does provide counseling, Probation Department Director Patrick Berter said this would focus more on helping those in transition from detainment. A lot of those kids are not detained except for a night or two, and when they come back, they need services, he said. The plan still needs approval of the county's finance committee and the full county board, both of which are expected to take up the plan this month. Our next article is written by Ryan Boyles, an H&R staff writer. Decatur Township sends steady signal on taxes. Unlike some other local taxing bodies, the Decatur Township will ask for little additional tax levy dollars ahead of next year. The Township Board of Trustees voted unanimously Wednesday night on a tentative plan that would keep the tax levy rate at 35 cents per $100 of equalized assessed valuation, or just less than $1.69, $1.69 million for the fiscal year that begins April 1st. Of the seven funds for which the township can levy, only the highway department will see an increase at 2%. The rest of the funds, which cover everything from cemetery upkeep to public assistance, will see their tax levy remain steady. Other taxing bodies across Illinois have discussed the idea of increasing their tax levies ahead of a possible state law that would freeze property taxes for at least 2 years. But trustee Susan Gant Reynolds said she wanted the township to be an exception. While others may increase, I want us to show the taxpayers we can be good keepers of their money, she said. A flat tax levy does not necessarily mean the tax rate will stay the same for township residents, though. Because of the declining population and property value in the Decatur area, a flat levy would mean a cut to a variety of township funds. Though it had levied just under $1.79 million last year, the township received only $1.68 million this fiscal year. With the downward trend of assessed values in the township, which has dropped the past 5 years, Supervisor Lisa Stanley said she expected the pattern to continue next year. In other business, several trustees raised questions about the potential hiring of a new community outreach employee. With turnover in the general assistance program after the recent retirements of two of the three longtime employees, Stanley has moved the current outreach person to cover as a caseworker for an employee out with health issues and rehired a previous general assistance employee for the office. With the number of staff in and out of the office, about 80% of the money budgeted for the entire fiscal year has already been used, with another 5 months to go. With this, as well as the high amounts spent on life insurance and unemployment insurance, trustees Amy Riff and Susan Gant Reynolds said it did not make sense to bring in another staff position with the current financial situation. Stanley said afterward she understood the concern and stressed the job posting for a new community outreach person was merely to collect resumes and that it was too soon to say whether anyone would be hired. We turn now to some of the local crime reports by Huey Freeman. The first, argument leads to trespassing, property damage, arrest. A 32-year-old woman was at her near Northside home October 26th when her boyfriend got into an argument with Tellus Rice because Rice refused to leave the property. Tellus ran up on the front porch of the residence and her boyfriend closed the door and locked it. The woman later told police, according to an affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer James Weddle. Rice, 38, responded by forcing his way through the locked door while holding an ashtray. As he entered the woman's home, he attempted to hit her with the ashtray. After the boyfriend shoved Rice from the house, Rice began breaking the house's windows. When the woman went outside to tell Rice to stop breaking her windows, Tellus struck her in the mouth with a closed fist, injuring her lip, Weddle wrote in his statement. The boyfriend went outside to try to restrain Rice, which led to Rice chasing the boyfriend around the middle of the street in the 400 block of West Sawyer Street with a metal pole about 6 feet long. After the boyfriend retreated back into the house, Tellus continued breaking windows out of the residence and eventually threw the pole through their bedroom window, end quote. Rice was arrested nearby a short time later and booked in the Macon County Jail, where he is being held on $20,000 bond. He was arraigned Tuesday on felony counts of criminal trespass to residence and damage to property exceeding $300, each punishable by 1 to 3 years in prison. Rice has served 3 prison terms in Cook County cases, 6 years for attempted murder in 2011, 3 years for felon possessing a firearm in 1997, and 2 years for unlawful use of a weapon in 1994. He was convicted in 2 misdemeanor cases in Macon County in 2015 for battery for punching a man in the mouth and criminal damage to property for which he is serving a 1-year conditional discharge term. Rice is due in court for his preliminary hearing in his most recent case on November 18. Also by Huey Freeman, police pursuit lands pair of arrests. Too many P's there. After Nicholas Demmer was taken to the hospital for treatment of gunshot wounds to his legs during a home invasion, police searched his residence and found cocaine, heroin, and a large amount of cash. Demmer, 30, was not immediately arrested but was placed on the police department's wanted list. On Tuesday, 5 weeks after the drugs were found in Demmer's residence, an officer saw Demmer riding in a vehicle. After the vehicle was pulled over, the 30-year-old driver was also arrested on drug charges after he fled on foot. On September 24, Decatur police officers were sent to Demmer's home in the 2100 block of East Lincoln Avenue on a home invasion report. Demmer and his girlfriend told police, quote, unknown suspects forced entry into the home and shot Demmer in his legs, end quote, said an affidavit by Decatur Police Detective Lonnie Llewellyn. After Demmer was transported to a hospital and his girlfriend went there to see him, a search warrant was obtained and executed at the residence. In the hallway near Demmer's bedroom where he was shot, I located a white canvas-type bag, the detective wrote in his statement. The bag contained 144 grams of cocaine and 8 grams of heroin with a street value of about $15,000. As the narcotics investigation was underway, Llewellyn saw Demmer riding in the passenger seat of a car on the city's east side just before midnight on Tuesday. Macon County Sheriff's Detective Jonathan Roseman pulled his squad car behind the car, activating his emergency lights and siren. After failing to come to a stop for several blocks, the driver pulled over in the 1900 block of East Dickinson Avenue. He fled from the car toward a wooded area, with Roseman in pursuit. After falling at the bottom of a ravine, the suspect recovered his footing, then disappeared from view. A few minutes later, the suspect was located hiding in a garbage bin on Indiana Court and identified as Garland E. Walton, Llewellyn wrote in his statement. With the assistance of a canine unit, a plastic bag containing about 63 grams of cocaine and 2 grams of marijuana was located near the point where the pursuing detective lost sight of the suspect. The street value of the drugs was estimated at $6,500. Walton recently served part of a 10-year prison sentence for a 2005 robbery conviction in Indiana. At the time of his arrest, Demmer was out on bond on a Class X armed violence case, including charges of aggravated battery, great bodily harm, and felon possessing weapons. They are each being held in jail on $75,000 bond, pending arraignments by November 12th. I'm turning now to some of the local brief items that appear in the A section of the paper. Our first, City Council Library Talk. The Decatur City Council will discuss an offer to acquire the Decatur Public Library building during an executive session November 16th. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf told the library board in a letter released Wednesday that the council would formalize an offer and make a written presentation to the board before its meeting November 19th. City Manager Tim Gleason is also expected to attend the library board meeting to answer questions. The communication is the latest in ongoing talks between the city and library regarding the future of the building at 130 North Franklin Street. From Charleston, mob action arrests made. The Charleston Police Department has arrested several people for a mob action incident that occurred October 10th at the Panther Paw. Officers responded at 2:05 a.m. to the bar regarding a large fight outside near the parking lot. After the fight, three people were treated at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon for knife wounds, and a fourth was treated for facial injuries, police reported. The injuries were not life-threatening. Arrested the night of the fight and accused of resisting a peace officer, then later charged with mob action, were Kazim Lawal, L-A-W-A-L, 28, of Charleston, and DeMonte James, 24, of Mattoon. Other suspects charged with mob action and now in custody are Brian Griffin, 27, of Charleston, Sherrod Peoples, 24, of Charleston, DeVell Wilson, 21, of Charleston, Alexis Schwartz, 21, of Ashmore, and Demontre Dillon, 24, of Mattoon. Warrants were outstanding for Antonio D. Hallam of Neoga, Jonathan J. Berry of Effingham, Calvin A. Winston of Mattoon, and Osiris S. Johnson of Charleston. Mob action is a felony that can bring a prison sentence of 1 to 3 years with a conviction. On more upbeat news, Youth Broadway Editions. Young actors and performers are invited to audition for the show Broadway in Downtown Decatur from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, November 6th, that's tomorrow, at the Lincoln Square Theater. Children ages 11 to 18 can register at the Decatur Indoor Sports Center or visit www.decatur-parks.org. The registration fee is $35, which will include a backstage pass to attend the audition workshop, an opportunity to perform Saturday, November 7th, in the Broadway show, and a ticket to the show. For more information, call 217-421-6648, extension 1. Oh, here's an upcoming AFSCME retirees meeting. Retired members of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Subchapter 87, will pay tribute to military veterans at two upcoming meetings. At the first, at 1 o'clock on Monday, November 9th, in the Staley Room of the Decatur Public Library, 130 North Franklin Street, the speakers will be Brian McDaniel of the Citizens Utility Board and Eric Denny of Decatur. At the second, at 1 p.m. Tuesday, November 10th, at Lincoln Land Community College in Litchfield, Benno White will talk about the Honor Flight program and its impact on veterans. Richland Veterans Program. Richland Community College will host a Veterans Day program at 11 a.m. Tuesday, November 10th, in the Mueller Student Center. Documentary filmmaker Nick Walsh will speak about his film Fire for Effect, which examines the impact and legacy of the Vietnam War on Decatur and its veterans. The film features interviews with over 35 local veterans and family members of those killed while serving in Vietnam. Walsh is a Central Illinois native and graduate of Millikan University and Eastern Illinois University. For more information, contact Michael Diggs at mdiggs@richland.edu or call 217-875-7211, extension 205. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then return with more news from the Decatur area. Hope you can stick around for the second half hour on this Thursday, November 5th. Hang tight.